to the Roma Press Podcast with John Solano.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Roma Press Podcast. As always, we hope you are doing well. We hope you are staying safe, and we hope you are staying sane wherever you are in the world while you were in quarantine. So it is another looking back episode. We are doing the 2013 and 2014 season as you guys voted. It just barely beat the 2015-2016 season for the next looking back episode. Just very briefly, I just want to talk about Friedkin. Today I had a story coming from a source in Friedkin's legal counsel. This deal is not dead, still on. To quote him, I didn't put this in the story, but it is 60-40 that they will do the deal. That is what he says. What that's worth remains to be seen. I'm optimistic. Let's just say that. I am optimistic that a deal gets done. All right, Andy, so let's go. The 2013-2014 season at Roma. So this was probably the, in terms of heartbreaking, Andy, like where do you rank this one? It's not quite 2009, 2010, or 2016, 2017, but it's pretty high up there because that was the best start Roma have had in their club history.
Yeah, and it's a case of same old, meaning it was so surprising because after the end of that particular season and the fashion that it ended, meaning the season previous season, the 12-13, and all the chaos that culminated in that particular season. And we basically started this revolution with Garcia, with selling tons and tons of players that we would never see again at this club. And so it was going against all expectations. I remember I didn't really know what I was seeing in those first few weeks when everything was going great, when Roma were just, you know, going full throttle. It was just so unlike Roma. And, you know, that season is still in the history books for a reason. But at the end of the day, it wasn't enough, you know, and that's why it's the same old, same old.
Now, in fairness, that was a super Juve. Roma, they finished the season in second place on 85 points. Juve, they win the Scudetto at 102 points. So Roma, despite the best start in their history, they finished 17 points behind the eventual winners. Now, I'm not going to say that this is a case of, because we always talk about the points that you drop in the beginning of the season are the ones that you regret later in the season. Yeah. But we all remember that stretch, right, where they draw. It was the month of November. It starts after that incredible win against Chievo, where we all remember Marco Borriello on Halloween gets that headed goal. Mm-hmm. I believe, and I didn't look this up, but I believe that was his only appearance in the first half of the season. And he scores the eventual winner against Chievo. And then after that miracle win, Roma, they draw against Torino, Sassuolo, Cagliari, Atalanta. They beat Fiorentina. Then they draw to Milan. They beat Catania. And then they lose to Juve. So out of one, two, three, four.
Is that like five or six draws?
So out of those eight matches, there's two wins, five draws, and the loss. So
yeah, wow.
That's where the season was lost. Now, there were some losses later in the season, but quite frankly, they were inconsequential. Scudetto was out of reach at that point. Champions League was guaranteed. So I guess you could say that's where any hopes of a Scudetto were lost. But, I mean, you start out with 10 wins, and then you only have two in your next eight. Not great. But again, this was a super Juve. Without question, one of the best teams in all of Europe at the time, don't you think? I mean, in my opinion, certainly stronger than the current Juve, even with Ronaldo.
No, I agree. Like, it was a different team, and it had some really just incredible talents, and it just worked so well. It was a well-oiled machine. Well, we were just starting out, and we'll get to it, but if you look at our team and who we brought in that summer, you really have to wrap your head around how they managed to go from being next level bad with Zeman and obviously Andrea Zoli and all that crap to being so surprisingly good. And with that squad that really wasn't, you know, we weren't anything compared to that Juve. So that's what it's really mind boggling how we started off. Obviously, we that second place was also very important because we went back into the Champions League after, is it 3 or 4 years of missing out on it? And so that's it. It's still an incredible season. It just wasn't enough.
Well, let's get to the transfer market because I think that was, if you want to talk about just such a, it's. Still, when you look at these names, I think you just said it best. On paper, you would not think that Roma, by the names they brought in, would make a huge jump, right? So let's go let's go through the list. So first, Tin Yedvai from Dinamo Zagreb, the party animal, as we like to call him. I think I've mentioned it on this podcast a couple of times.
Moscow?
Well, I think Tin Yedvai had more drunken nights on the streets of Rome than he did appearances.
All right.
I say that like half jokingly, but half serious. The guy was, I'll leave it at that. That speaks for itself.
Best friends with Borriello.
And then you had Skorupski. He came in. You had Benatia arrive from Udinese, Maicon arriving on a free transfer from Manchester City, Kevin Strootman arriving from PSV, De Sanctis arriving for 500,000 euros from Napoli, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Gervinho, arriving from Arsenal for a 8 million euros fee, Jajic from Fiorentina for 11 million euros. You had a bunch of random youngsters arrive, such as Golubovic. No idea what happened to him. Remember Valmir Berisha? Everybody was calling him the next Ibrahimovic. Let's see what club he plays in now. one that I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce, so I'll leave it at that. He's playing in the Romanian league now, so that's all you have to know. You had Tony Sanabria arrive from Barcelona. Obviously, in the winter, you had Now, how about this for a January? Nainggolan, Michel Bastos, and Rafael Toloi. Bastos, I think the only thing I remember for him was him holding up the scarf that said Lazio Merda and the goal against Sassuolo. I can't remember anything else against him. Or about him.
That's right.
In the Roma shirt. I can't remember anything else he did. So what do you make of this? Because for me at the time, I remember being totally shocked out of all of this that Roma were able to get Strootman from PSV. For me, that was like a masterstroke of a deal.
I mean, looking back at it, it is still a masterstroke. I mean, we'll get to our favorite players later, but really, if you look at this list of who really made a significant difference and improved that team and made it possible for Roma to sort of, again, chase that dream of a Scudetto, was Strootman and Benatia. Yep. Obviously, Gervinho is, you know, we all know his ups and downs and him being a FIFA legend, but the true talents of that team and the ones that, you know, later on we would regret giving away, Benatia and obviously Strootman with all the injuries. But at that point, if you could find, you know, a better defender and a better midfielder in the league, those were the guys.
Yeah, I don't know about you. Do you remember when he went down in March in that Coppa Italia match against... It was Napoli, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was against Napoli. Or no, it was in February. I stand corrected. But anyway, it felt like that's where like the air was let out of everybody because at that point, they weren't going to win the Scudetto. It was obvious. But a Coppa Italia was not out of the question. And it seemed like after Strootman sustained that injury that it seemed like at that point that was it.
Kind of like Zaniolo this year, right?
Yes.
Didn't it feel like that? Like when Zaniolo went down this year, we both said it on here. It's like we were like, okay, this can go either way. Either it goes into the shitter or something, and it just felt deflating. And the same way as when Strootman went down, because that was the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly it takes the wind out of your sail. I mean, there's no doubting that. Oh, you know what? I lied. Strootman sustained the injury in March in a league match, right? Yeah, because February seems too early. Anyway, someone correct us on that. Someone correct us on that. I'm almost certain that he's staying. Yeah, you know what? It was the league match when they lost. So Roma had already lost to Coppa Italia. But anyway, the point remains. The interesting thing for me is the only, I would say the biggest hindrance of this Roma was maybe the lack of depth and maybe the lack of a out-and-out number nine. Because do we all remember what happened? Destro, he's still out from the torn ACL, yeah, right? The first few months of the season. And then he comes back and he goes on that crazy scoring run. Remember? I believe he ends up as
our leading goal scorer. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers here.
13 goals, Destro.
13 goals in 23 league appearances. 23.
Crazy. Crazy.
It's nuts. You're still playing with the... Someone do the math. How old is Totti at that time? 35, 36, something like that?
36, possibly. Yeah. No, 35.
35. So you're still playing with quite an old Totti at that point. I would say, again, the lack of depth and maybe an out-and-out number nine is really what prevented Roma from maybe doing a bit more this season. But what do you... not what do you remember most from this season, but from that transfer market, who is your favorite player? For me, it always has to be Gervinho. Because it was so funny because for Garcia, even the thing that damned him in 2015-2016, which we will get to later in a different episode... It was always the attack that was the problem, right? The lack of goals. It just looked very disjointed in the attack, lack of fluidity.
Yep.
Remember the old strategy. Just give it to Gervinho and let him do something.
Yeah.
I mean, that was that literally seemed like the attacking game plan in 60-70% of the matches.
Yeah, if you've seen Parma in the these recent months, then that's
the same thing.
Yes,
same thing. Yep.
Yeah.
He draws defenders away. Even at his age now, he opens up so much space.
He was like a precursor to Salah at Roma.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Now, we all know his finishing ability. We don't have to get into that. I mean, that speaks for itself.
As good as his hairline, probably.
Well, I didn't know this. In 37 total appearances, he had 12 goals, which is not even... that's great. That's a pretty good return. But yeah, he missed a bevy of chances. The one that always sticks out in my mind is the draw against Cagliari. He had an open header and he had an open shot. And I'm pretty sure Roma admin, what was it? IS Roma Nightmares. They tweeted the highlights from that match. Because do you remember who the goalkeeper was in that match for Cagliari? It was 0-0. It was the 25th of November, 2013.
No, Roma, remind me. I'm obviously, it sounds right because it's Cagliari, so.
Vlada Avramov. You know who that is? He was the goalkeeper for Cagliari. And somewhere, if you go to the timeline of IS Roma Nightmares on Twitter, he tweeted out clips from this specific match that we're referring to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. I remember that. Oh, my God. Yes. When he had that knight, like this mysterious creature that came out of the dark and basically was had the best knight any goalkeeper could possibly ever have in ever, period, ever.
I don't think I've ever seen a performance that good, because it's not like this guy was... Listen, it's not like you're watching Alisson save goal after goal against Atletico Madrid. We all know Alisson is good. This guy, if you just look, first off, he played for Vicenza, which I didn't even know that. He has played for Treviso, Torino, Atalanta, and FC Tokyo. This guy is a nobody. He is currently the goalkeeping coach at Brescia. Didn't know that either.
And you could tell it by Brescia's record of goals conceded.
So it's astonishing to me, things like that happen throughout the season. But without question, Gervinho will always hold a special place in my heart just because of how you loved him, yet you hated him. I mean, yeah. The scoring opportunities that he would create from out of nothing at the snap of a finger, Roma would have the opportunity to score because he creates something out of nothing. He just breezes by somebody. He was a guy you loved, but then when you saw him in front of the goal, you would obviously pull your hair out and end up being bald and potentially borderline alcoholic. But I still loved him. Loved him. Yeah. What about you?
True. No. I agree. Listen, I still think that is... Man, because that guy has so much personality. I think he wasted so much of his career. I really don't know what the point was of, going somewhere else, chasing money, because the talent is there. I mean, he accepted to be benched so much time at Juve. He wasn't happy at Bayern, and people forget what a quality defender he is, because he has so much personality. Man. And I will never forget those celebrations with the Roma shirt where he does the machine gun thing. I just love that, because I think, it's fine. It's all good. It's all fine and dandy, but in a Roma team with the likes of, Destro and all those people ridden of a personality, when you have a guy as aggressive as Benatia, paired with Castan, when Castan was still
Castan, yeah, right,
the Castan
right.
That we all loved, that's my God, those are memories.
Yeah, I was talking to someone actually, someone at Roma about this, and I think just having covered, or when I started writing about Roma, of all the sales, I think that one still to this day is the one that hurts me just from a personal Roma supporter standpoint the most, because, they replaced him with Manolas. Manolas, very good. I still don't think Manolas is anywhere near the quality of Benatia. But just from an individual season standpoint, I still maintain, and I apologize if you find this as hyperbole, but Andy, for me, like, that individual season was up there to the likes of Samuel. I don't think anybody has come close. Maybe Juan somewhere. But Benatia, man. Talk about... And you know what makes it even more frustrating is he still speaks so fondly of Roma. So fondly. He gets asked about it all the time. I think there's a part of me that thinks even he regrets leaving.
Even recently.
We're talking within the last 48 hours. Yeah. I think he just talked today about it. He said it was one of the best experiences of his career. Part of me thinks that if he had to go back in time and do this all over, was there any doubting that he deserved a new contract and a raise in wages? Of course not. But knowing what I know now, I would put 75% of the blame on his agent who, listen, you guys who read the website, I talk to an agent every other day. As far as the scumbag scale goes, most agents, in a way, are scumbags. You kind of have to be in that line of work. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. You have to be a bit of a prick, okay?
Benatia's
agent. Benatia's agent, though, man, gave him some of the worst advice I think I've ever seen an agent give a player. And can you think of a like of an operation that just served no purpose or served nobody well. I mean, he left Roma. Obviously, again, Roma get Manolas. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I don't think he was anywhere as good as Benatia. Benatia, he goes to Bayern, and he leaves not so long thereafter. And now, I mean, where is he playing? Qatar?
Something like that. Yeah, for oil money, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. A player of his quality, even at his age, what is he now, 32? I'm sorry, but even at his age. Oh, actually, tomorrow he'll be 33. So even at 33, somebody like him still has the quality, in my opinion, to be playing in an important league and in an important team. And I just, I despise the way it worked out. I despise it.
Yeah, probably the most excruciating thing about this whole Benatia deal is that the guy was wasted. I mean, half the time he was benched by Irugani, did not build any chemistry at Bayern. There wasn't any feeling between the club and him. And with Juventus in the more important moments of the season, he was always getting benched and wasn't getting enough playing time. And now, you know, he's off. But looking back on it, you know, and looking at the names of Hector Moreno and Thomas Vermaelen and Fazio and Juan Jesus and all those other people who came in and to play center back for Roma for some period of time, you know, you have to wonder what could have been had things stayed a certain way, had Benatia made the different choice, had Castan stayed fit, because that was when at the top of their game, that was a killer partnership.
Yeah, it really was. And again, I just, part of me thinks that if he had to go back in time and do it all over again, he would make a different decision, or at least not let his agent influence him to the degree in which he did. All right, so best moments of that season, or best moment, what is it for you? For me, it's that away win at Inter. Florenzi had that goal, Totti had the goal. I just remember how that, for me, in that season, that was like Roma at its best, very fluid. The other moment I would probably pick is good old Michael Bradley extending the winning streak against Udinese when Roma were down to 10 men because Maicon got sent off. And Michael Bradley comes in and nets the winner for Roma, which if you just talk about his tenure at Roma, that's literally the only thing
that's
I can
exactly
remember.
The best moment for me, because it was just so, it's so unlike anything. It was surreal, right? Like you were actually seeing Michael Bradley giving you an essential win. Michael Bradley, who's, if somebody was following John a few years ago, John has a whole catalog of tweets of people that praise Michael Bradley because they live in this alternate reality. But that on that day, Michael Bradley was my hero. It was just like, you know, if like Batman swooped in to save the day, that was Michael Bradley against Udinese. Really, if you watch that, if I rewatch that match, I will still cheer for Michael Bradley.
Oh, you and I both. Yeah, he was. Yeah, that was incredible by him. Literally the only positive moment he's ever had in the Roma shirt. Couple of other things.
In his whole career.
Yeah, probably. I don't follow American football, so I'm sure someone who watches MLS can enlighten us on that. A couple of other things. Maicon, man, I thought he was finished as a footballer, but literally this is the only season at Roma where he did because the next 2 years are just mired with injury after injury after injury. But this season, man, he was so good. I mean, that was following the 2009-2010 season when they won, when Inter won the triple. That was probably the closest he's come to being at that level since he left. Because at Manchester City, he was terrible. But, oh my God, Andy, that season with him, that was incredible. That was close to peak Maicon. Very, very close.
Well, yeah, and you have to take into consideration who he had you know, on that flank for the past, 2 years with the likes of Jose Angel. Pires, you know, you that's Pires. And then you bring in Maicon, that's, you know, and as you said, he gave us, because that's what he did. He gave us a year of his life, and then he was like, okay, I'm done. You know, that's,
yeah.
This is, I yeah. can't be bothered. Injuries, whatever, you know, the weight, everything was, and, you know, we talked about Emerson's incredible season before and the likes of Riise and even Digne, but Maicon was, peak Maicon was incredible at Roma. And again, one of those that left a lot to be desired, because again, those remaining 2 years was just a tragedy.
And then that season, the midfield for me, without question, well, if you want to count Benatti and Castan, I thought Balzaretti, isn't that when Balzaretti got the injury, right? Or is that the following season? Remember he had that weird groin injury that they thought was a hernia that turned out to be something far worse than that? Yes, that was that season. Because good old Dodo and Romagnoli were playing on the left, which, yikes. But for me, yeah, that midfield of Strootman, De Rossi, Pjanic, Nainggolan doesn't really get much better than that, does
yeah.
it? And that was, again, before the ACL injury, that was peak Strootman. I know it's so hard to go back and think, because even before he left, when Roma went to the Champions League semifinal, that Strootman was not the Strootman that we saw from the beginning. I mean, the Strootman we saw in 2013 embodied the word box-to-box midfielder all over the place. He was still good after the injuries, but man, he was never the same after that knee injury. Never.
Yeah, I agree. He was, you know, he lost mobility, and his whole game was about mobility. His whole game was about physicality, strength, and pace, and he lost it. But in that first, when I talk to people and they're like, yeah, but Strootman is, you know, right now is like this. And when was he ever that player? Well, in this season, Strootman was unbelievable. And we all thought he was one of the best midfielders in Europe. I mean, he was the captain of the national team, the youngest captain of the national team, I think, at that time. And he just had all the everything. He had everything to be one of the greatest midfielders in the world. And unfortunately, he suffered a lot. But as you said, the peak Strootman, peak Maicon, peak Benatia, that's peak Nainggolan, peak Pjanic. Those are the ingredients that were necessary to sort of propel that Roma as underdogs that particular year.
Well, man, and I know he gets a lot of abuse, but we give him some stick. Florenzi, man, remember how... That's when we first saw him leave the midfield and play on the wing, remember? I mean, he even had the goal against Inter, that fantastic goal against Inter with the assist from Totti.
Was that his first goal with Roma?
No. Well, that was the season before when he had that header against Inter.
But when they won
3-0 at the Miazza, that was when Totti, he had the two penalties, and then he gave... And then Florenzi had that real good assist. Even Florenzi on the wing was really good that season. This season, I don't even know, because again, it was a super Juve. I don't even know how much you can regret from it, because when you measure it compared to all the other Roma seasons, I mean, this is still quite... This is far above expectations. If you were told that Roma were going to win their first 10 matches of the season, you obviously would have snapped someone's hand off to take that. Now, in the end, 85 points from this Roma, when you look at it on paper, I think that's pretty fair. I don't think this Roma necessarily deserved the Scudetto, right?
No, I think what went right in this season was that Roma, for the first time in a long time, and, you know, as we do this podcast, and we've been doing it for quite a while, and we always talk about the decisions that Roma make. The right decisions are often very few, but leading up to this season, the management did what they had to do. They brought in a coach. They gave him what he wanted. They offloaded so much, so many names. If you go back to that season, you read the list of players that left. You gave away Lamela. You gave away all the the old guard. You gave yes. away the Osvaldo, Boan. It's a long list. Steck. And that was a true revolution, but it was done in such a way that you gambled. You thought, okay, who are we giving away, Lamela or Pjanic? And you stuck with Pjanic, and it paid off. And yes. you went for Nainggolan because you recognized in him a champion, a special player. That worked. You went for Strootman, who was showing incredible potential. That worked. Everything was made right. And it was a chance for Roma to develop chemistry, to really go for it with, you know, with a fresh mindset, without the dead weight, without, you know, the likes of Perrotta and all that was cast aside and was, okay, we're focusing on this season. And to an extent, it worked. You went back to the Champions League. You still went for the history books, despite, you know, coming short and having a lack of depth. That's what made it possible, I think.
Yeah, completely agree. All right, well, we will throw out another poll next week after this episode airs as to which season you guys would like to hear next. The 2015-2016 season came extremely close to this one in terms of the votes this week, so I'm assuming that'll probably be the one that we discuss. I've thrown out the 2010-2011 season out there, I think, for like 4 or 5 weeks now. Doesn't seem like anybody wants to discuss that one, which I'm pleased about because I don't want to talk about that one either. So, as always, we will be back next week. We thank you so, so much for listening. Again, please continue to stay safe, be smart, stay inside, don't do anything silly, and we will talk to you next time. So, until then, ciao.
Ciao.